21. Wax stood in the center of the small vessel, pushing against some kind of plate down below, designed, obviously, for this very purpose. It would be attached to the shelf the vessel had been on, not something that rose with it, but some kind of launch pad for an allomancer to use as an anchor. This vessel, though tiny, should still have been too heavy to lift. He should have broken those straps he held to, or been crushed by the force of his own push. Yet he managed it. He held to those straps, essentially hitching himself to the ship, and lifted it, with all the people inside, off a ledge that had extended from the mother vessel. "It's those medallions," he realized. "They allow everyone to do as I do, to make themselves light, nearly as light as air." That meant he was really only lifting the ship itself, along with their equipment. Their vehicle was small, barely 6 feet wide, though it was maybe twice as long, and had wide openings like doorways on either side. Those had faced walls inside the pocket-like shelf they'd popped out of, but now they exposed the air. All in all, the thing felt like the cab of a motor car with the doors ripped off. As the craft rose, small pontoons on extended arms folded down and clicked into place. Wax had a brief view of surprised soldiers on the portion of the catwalk he'd broken, and then they were out, rising through the opening in the warehouse roof. The strange man in the red mask scrambled through the vehicle and leaned out one of the holes in the walls to look downward. He looked solemn as he saluted the ship below, then bowed his head, whispering something. Finally, he turned to Wax.
"You are doing great, O Divine One."
"I'm not going to be able to push it much higher," Wax said with a grunt. "The anchor is too far away."
"You shouldn't need to,"
the man said, scrambling past Marcy. He patted her on the shoulder, then fiddling with some controls at the front of the machine.
"I need the primer cube, please," he said,
holding out a hand to Wayne. "Eh?" Wayne said, looking away from where he'd been hanging out the other door to look down. A few distant gunshots sounded as soldiers took pot shots at the hovering vehicle. "Oh, this?" Wayne took out the allomantic grenade.
"Yeah,"
the man said, snatching it.
"Thanks."
He spun and pressed it against Wax's arm until, as he was still burning steel to keep them afloat, it started buzzing. The little man turned and snapped the cube into place under the shelf at the front of the ship. The machine shook, and then something started thumping underneath them. A fan? Yes, a very large one, blowing downward, powered by an unseen motor.
"You can let go, great being of metals," the man said, looking back at Wax, "if it suits your divine desires."
Wax eased off his push. They immediately started to sink.
"Reduce your weight," the man cried. "I mean, if it is aligned with your magnificent will, O Metabolic One."
"Metabolic?" Wax asked, filling his metal mind and decreasing his weight. The ship stabilized in the air.
The masked man said, seating himself at the front. "Well, we're supposed to use a different title each time, yeah? I've never been very good at this, Your Magnificence. Please don't launch a coin directly into my skull. I'm not insolent, just stupid."
He pushed a lever forward, and smaller fans began whirring at the ends of the pontoons.
"They're not boats," Milan whispered. "Not this one. Not the big one below. They're flying ships."
"Harmony's bands," Marcy said. She was very pale, holding to her wounded stomach. Flying ships that ran on some kind of allomancy. Rust and ruin. Wax felt the world seem to lurch around him. If electricity had changed life so dramatically, what would this do? Wax forced himself to shake out of his stupor and looked to the short masked man. "What's your name?" Wax said.
"Alec Neverfar, tall one," the man said.
"Wait here a moment then, Alec."
"Whatever you desire, oh."
Wax jumped out of the vehicle before he could be praised, or insulted, he couldn't tell which these were, again. He got a better look at the small airship as he left. Yes, it looked more like a long motor car cab than it did a boat with that flat bottom. The large fan was separated from the ship by a short space, allowing air intake above. The doorways on the walls didn't seem to close. It was fortunate the seats had straps. Wax dropped through the sky, afraid to push off the small airship, but unable to use anchors down below to slow and direct himself toward the forests north of the camp. He wanted to be quick. That ship wasn't up so high that it would be safe if they had access to cannons. He dropped into the forest and surprised Steris, who sat on her horse with the others in a line, all packed and ready to go.
"Lord Waxillium," she cried. "I assumed you'd be coming and prepared—"
"Great," Wax said, walking to his horse. "Get down and grab your pack and Marises." She did so without objection or question, pulling off her small pack of essentials, then fetched that of Marisi. Wax did the same for Milan and Wayne.
"We're leaving the horses?"
Steris asked. He released the horses, then grabbed Steris around the waist. "Turns out we've found something better." He pulled out one of his older guns, then dropped it. He'd need a large chunk of metal to get them high enough, and pushed, launching them from the forest and into the sky. He'd worried about maneuvering. Doing so up high wasn't easy without skyscrapers to push against. However, Alex steered the ship toward him, allowing him to get Steris one of the armbands, then set her into the vessel before climbing in himself. He'd managed to accept the new weight of the supplies, though Alec had to pull a lever to keep them from sinking.
7 people, the masked man said, and supplies. Above the weight Wilg is supposed to carry, but she should manage, until our metal runs out. The question is, where do you want her to take us?
Elendil, Wax said, walking toward the front of the little ship.
Great, Alec said. And where is that?
North, Wax said, pointing. The little shelf at the front of the vehicle, like the dash of a motor car, had a compass set into it. If you head west first, though, and find the river, we can—
No,
Telson seized Wax by the arm.
We need to talk.
Gunfire sounded below, followed by an echoing boom. Great, they did have a cannon. Just get us away from here, Wax said to Alec, as he let Telson tow him toward the back of the small ship. He passed Wayne, still hanging halfway out of one of the two open doorways and gawking. Marisi was on the floor, with Milan checking her wound, while Steris had already started packing their bags into an efficient pile between two of the seats. The fans whirred, and the ship began to move, not quickly, but steadily, away from the enemy camp. Wax settled onto a bench at the back of the ship with his sister. Rusts. Telson. Finally. It had been a year and a half since he'd promised to stop his uncle and free her. Now, here she was, sitting beside him. She looked like a modern woman, with her hair in curls, wearing a stylish dress of contemporary fashion. Thin material, hem up right below the knees, a neckline to emphasize a long neck and delicate, drooping chains. If you didn't look at her eyes, you could have assumed she was a fine lady on her way to a ball. If you did look into her eyes, all you found was coldness.
Waxillium, she said softly. There's a weapon of some sort to the south, hidden among the mountains separating the basin from the roughs. Uncle Edworn has found it. He's on his way there.
How much do you know? Wax asked, taking her hand. Telson, do you know what he's planning? Is it a revolution?
He doesn't tell me much, she said. Her voice was so calm, so cold, compared to how it had been before.
Always full of passion, ever nudging him to do things he should not. It seemed like they'd leached the life out of her during her months of captivity.
We have dinner together most nights when he is here, but he grows angry if I ask about his work. He wanted me for one of his projects, originally, but my age makes that impossible. Now I am just a pawn, to use against you, I believe.
No longer, Wax said, squeezing her hand. No more, Telson.
And if he finds this weapon, she asked. He seemed convinced it is there, and that it will give his group the power to dominate the basin. Waxillium, we can't let him have it.
Some passion returned to her eyes, some of the Telson he remembered.
If he seizes the basin, then he will take me again. He will kill you, and he will take me.
We'll get to Ellendale, inform the governor, and then send an expedition.
And if that takes too long, Telson said, do you know what the weapon is? The thing he is searching for?
Wax looked down at the medallion strapped to her arm. Ferrochemy and allomancy anyone can use.
The Lord Ruler's own power, Waxillium, Telson said, passionate. The bands of mourning. We could find them. Use them before he does. He has to travel by foot on a treacherous mountain trail. I heard them preparing for it. We, however...
She looked out the doorway toward the passing landscape. This was a view few ever saw. A view once reserved only for coin shots. Let me check on Maracy, Wax asked. Then we'll decide. Maracy soared above the world, looking at a land bathed in starlight. Trees like shrubs, rivers like streams, hills like little lumps. The land was Harmony's garden. Was this how he saw it, with God's perspective? The path taught he was all around, that his body was the mists, that he saw all and was all. The mists were pervasive, but visible only when he wanted them to be. She'd always liked this teaching, as it made her feel his nearness. Yet other aspects of the path bothered her. There was no structure to it, and because of that everyone seemed to have their own idea of how it should be followed. Survivorists, like Maracy herself, regarded Harmony differently. Yes, he was God, but to them he was more a force than a benevolent deity. He was there, but he was as likely to help a beetle as he was to help a man, for all were the same to him. If you really wanted to get something done, you prayed to the survivor, who had, somehow, survived even death. Maracy winced as Milan continued to work.
Yes, Milan said. Very interesting.
Maracy lay on the floor of the vehicle, near the doorway, head on a pillow made from a wadded-up jacket. The wind wasn't too bad, contrary to what Maracy would have expected, as they weren't moving terribly fast, though the fans did make a fair amount of noise. Milan had spread Maracy's uniform aside in a very improper way, barely keeping the most important bits covered. Nobody seemed to care, though, so Maracy didn't make a fuss. Besides, this was far less disconcerting than what Milan was doing to her. The Condor woman knelt over Maracy, hand on her side, the flesh having liquefied and run down into the wound. It was discomfortingly like what had happened when she'd picked the lock, as if Maracy were just another puzzle to be manipulated. Rusts she could feel, Milan, poking around in there with bits of flesh that had become tentacles.
I'm going to die, aren't I? Maracy asked softly.
Yes, Milan said.
Light from a small lantern from their packs illuminated her face.
Nothing I can do about that.
Maracy squeezed her eyes shut. It served her right, running about like some lawman from the roughs, scrambling through the firefights and assuming she was invincible.
How is it?
Waxillium's voice asked. Maracy opened her eyes to see him leaning over, and she found herself blushing at her state of near nudity. Of course. Her final emotion would be embarrassment because of damned Waxillium Ladrian. Milan asked, pulling her arm out, the flesh forming back over her crystalline bones.
Oh, I caught a hole in the intestines, as you'd guessed. Sewed that up tight using some catgut I made from some spare intestines I had brewing. I patched it with some of my flesh grafted on.
She'll eject the flesh.
Nah, I took a bite and replicated her skin. Her body will think it's hers.
You ate part of me? Maracy said.
Wow. Waxillium said. That's... wow.
Yeah, well, I'm incredible,
Milan said.
Excuse me.
She reached her hand out the open side of the flying vehicle, then dropped a stream of something vile.
Had to slurp up some things inside there to clean everything out. The safest way.
She eyed Marcy.
You owe me.
Is that the part of me you, ate? Marcy asked.
No, just what was leaking, Milan said. That grafted patch over the wound should hold until you heal on your own. I melded it to your veins and capillaries. It's going to get itchy, but don't scratch it. And let me know if it starts to get necrotic.
Marcy hesitated, then prodded at her wound with exploratory fingers. She found only tight flesh, like that from a scar, patching the hole. It barely hurt. More a dull pain, like a bruise. She sat up, amazed.
You said I was going to die.
Of course you're going to die, Milan said, cocking her head. You're mortal. Can't turn you into a chondra by just... Oh, you thought today. Hell, girl, that shot barely clipped you.
You're an awful person, Marcy said. You realize this?
Milan grinned, nodding to Axilium, who offered a hand to help Marcy up. She quickly straightened her uniform, though Milan had cut it in ways that made modesty difficult. She'd have to dig into her pack for something new, but how would she ever change in the vehicle's crowded confines? She sighed, taking Waxillium's hand and letting him pull her to her feet. For now, she kept one hand at her waist, preventing her trousers from falling off. He offered her his mist coat, and, after a moment's hesitation, she put it on.
Thanks, she said,
noting that underneath the coat he had been wearing a bandage of his own, upper left arm right below the shoulder. Had he also been shot during the fighting? He hadn't said anything, which made her feel even more foolish. Waxillium nodded his head toward the front of the vehicle, where Alex sat with his feet up on the dash, leaning back. Due to the mask, it was impossible to read his expression, but she felt his posture was reflective.
You feel like talking with him? Waxillium asked.
I suppose, Marcy said. I'm a little lightheaded and a lot humiliated, but other than that, I'm fine.
Waxillium smiled, then took her arm.
You got Relure's spike?
Yes,
Marcy said, though she fished in her purse to make sure, to have her fingers on it, just in case. She held it up.
These degrade if they're out of a body, don't they? Waxillium said, glancing at Milan, who had settled in a doorway with her legs dangling out, completely ignoring the perfectly good seats.
How do you know about that? She asked.
The book Iron Eyes gave me.
Oh, right,
Milan said, her expression darkening.
That. You know, the Lord Mistborn was wrong to create it.
I've read it regardless. Milan sighed, looking out.
The longer it's away from Relure, the more its blessing will weaken. But they are powerful and can last some time. Besides, even if the blessing degrades, the spike will still store his mind anyway, with some loss of memory.
Her voice caught on that last part, and she turned away.
Well, we have it, thanks to you, Waxillium said, looking at Marcy. And I have my sister. So we should turn back to Elendil and find out what Alec knows.
We should, Marcy agreed. But your uncle...
You heard my conversation with Telson?
Enough of it.
When she hadn't been distracted by the fear that she was dying. Stupid Chondra.
And what do you think? Waxillium asked.
I don't know, Waxillium, Marcy said.
Did we really come here for the spike, or even your sister?
No, he said softly. We came to stop Soot.
Marcy nodded, then dug a little more in her purse, bringing out the notebook she'd stolen from Eirik's study. She flipped to the page with the map and held it so both she and Waxillium could see it. It had a spot clearly labeled Second Sight, some kind of base camp in the mountains, and beyond that, something high up among some other peaks, indicated as dangerously high. Notes from Eirik said, Temple reported to be here.
A weapon, Waxillium said, brushing the map with his fingers. The bands of mourning.
It's real.
My uncle thinks it is.
Waxillium hesitated.
And I do too.
Can you imagine him as a Mistborn? Marcy said. And a full ferrochemist? Immortal. Like Miles, only far worse. Possessing the strength of all metals. Like the Lord Ruler come again.
My uncle said he was going to the second site, Waxillium said, studying the map. It's possible that his expedition hasn't gotten to the temple yet, though. They know where it is from their interrogations. But they were still planning their expedition. With this machine, we could beat him there.
Waxillium drew in a deep breath, then nodded toward Alec up in his seat.
Will you talk to him? Find out what he knows.
The man's been through a lot, Waxillium, Marcy said softly. I think they must have tortured and murdered his friends. He doesn't deserve an interrogation right now.
We don't deserve a lot of things that happen to us, Marcy. Talk to him, please. I'd do it, but the way he treats me, well, I think you'll get better answers.
She sighed, but nodded and climbed past Wayne, who was, unsurprisingly, slumped in a seat and snoring away. Steris sat with her hands in her lap, content, as if riding in a flying machine were an everyday occurrence. Telson sat in the very back. Marcy wobbled. Rusts, she was lightheaded. Fortunately, the front of the vehicle had two seats, the one Alec used and a smaller stool next to him. Alec glanced at her, and she realized she'd been wrong about his posture. He wasn't pensive. He was cold. He sat there with arms wrapped around himself and even shivered a little. She was surprised. It was colder up here than down below, true, but she wasn't particularly cold herself. Then again, she was wearing Waxillium's coat now. Alec turned back toward the windshield as she settled down on the stool.
I had assumed, he said, that everyone up here in the land of the Sovereign was a barbarian. Nobody wears masks. And what your people did to my crewmates.
He shivered again. This didn't seem to be the cold.
But then you let me out, he continued. And you had one of them with you. A grand metal born of the precious arts. So I'm left confused.
I don't feel like a barbarian, Marcy said, but I doubt all but the most barbarous of people feel like one. I'm sorry about what happened to your friends. They had the misfortune of running across a group of very evil people.
There were 15 masks on the wall, Alec said. But Brunstelt's crew was nearly 100, yeah? I know that some died in the crash, but the rest... Do you know where they might be?
He looked to her, and she could see pain in his eyes behind the mask.
Maybe,
Marcy said, surprised to realize she might. She turned the notebook around, showing the map. Do you know anything about this? Alec stared at it.
How did you get that?
I found it in the desk of one of your captors.
They couldn't communicate with us,
Alec said, taking the notebook.
How did they get this from us?
Marcy grimaced. While torture was a terribly ineffective method of interrogation, at least as far as legal cases were concerned, she suspected it was a powerful motivator for overcoming barriers.
You think they're here?
Alec said, pointing at the map.
You think the men who captured them, the evil men, brought my crewmates to find the Sovereign's temple?
It sounds like something Suit would do, Marcy said, glancing back at Waxillium, who had settled into a seat behind her and leaned forward to listen. Bring guides or experts, just in case. He's on his way here, the leader of those who killed your friends.
Then that is where I must go,
Alec said, sitting up and changing the direction of the ship.
Wilg and I will drop you somewhere, if you demand it, for I'm not about to make that one angry.
He thumbed over his shoulder at Waxillium.
But I've got to find my crewmates.
Who is the Sovereign? Waxillium asked from behind.
Alec winced.
Surely he was not as great as you, remarkable one.
Waxillium said nothing.
He's staring at me, isn't he?
Alec asked softly of Marisy. She nodded.
Eyes like icicles, Alec said, drilling into me from behind.
He spoke more loudly.
The Sovereign was our king from 3 centuries ago. He told us he was your king first, and your god.
The Lord Ruler? Waxillium said. He died.
Yes, Alec said. He told us that too.
300 years ago, Waxillium said. Exactly?
330, persistent one.
Waxillium shook his head.
That's after Harmony ascended. Are you sure about those dates?
Of course I'm sure, Alec said. But if you wish me to revise my beliefs in order to...
No, Waxillium said. Just speak the truth.
Alec sighed, rolling his eyes, an odd expression to see from one in a mask.
Gods,
he whispered to her.
Very temperamental.
Anyway, the Sovereign came about 10 years after the ice death happened, yeah? Silly name, but you've got to call it something. The land was beautiful and warm, and then it froze.
Marisy glanced toward Waxillium, frowning. He shrugged. Froze, she said. I don't recall hearing of freezing.
It's frozen right now, Alec said, shivering. You had it here, too. You must have. Over 3 centuries ago, the ice death came.
The Catasandra? Waxillium said. Harmony remade the world. Saved it.
Froze it, Alec said, shaking his head. The land was soft and warm, and now it is harsh and broken and frozen.
Harmony, Marisy whispered. Alex from the south, Waxillium. Haven't you read the old books? The people from the Final Empire never went in that direction. The oceans boiled, supposedly, if you got too close to the equator.
The people who lived down south adapted, Waxillium said softly. No ash mounts to fill the sky with ash, to cool it.
So the world nearly ended, Alec continued. And the Sovereign, he came and he saved us, taught us this.
He gestured toward the armband he wore with the medallion, then paused.
Well, not this particular one, this one.
He reached into his desk and took out the other medallion he'd worn, the one he'd taken out of the safe back in the warehouse. He put it on, swapping it for the language one, and sighed in contentment. Marisy watched him, then raised her hand as if to touch his, and he nodded, allowing it. His skin grew warmer even as she sat there.
Heat,
she said, glancing toward Waxillium. This medallion stores heat. That's a property of Ferrochemy, right? Waxillium nodded.
The most archetypal. In the ancient days, my Terrace ancestors dwelled in the highlands, often traveling through snow-filled mountain passes. The ability to store their heat, then draw upon it, allowed them to survive where nobody else could.
Alec sat, basking in his warmth for a time before, with obvious reluctance, pulling off his medallion and swapping it quickly for the one that somehow allowed him to speak to them.
Without these,
he said, holding up the first medallion,
we'd be dead. Gone. All 5 peoples extinct, yeah?
Marisy nodded. And he taught you this, the Sovereign?
Sure did. Saved us, bless him. Taught us that the Metalborn were pieces of God, each one of them, though we didn't have any of those at first. He gave us devices, and started the Fire Mothers and Fire Fathers who lived to fill these medallions so the rest of us may leave our homes and survive in this too cold world. After he left, we used his gifts to figure out the rest, like these that make us fly.
The Lord Ruler, Marisy said, seeking redemption for what he did up here by saving the people down there.
He was dead, Waxillium said. The records
have been wrong before, Marisy said. It had to be him, Waxillium. And that means the bands.
Waxilia moved up beside Alec on the other side. The masked man eyed him, as if made very uncomfortable by his presence.
"These," Waxilium said, plucking the heat-giving medallion off the dash. "You can create these as you wish."
"If we have the metal born to do so, and the excisors, yes. The excisors are the gifts the Sovereign made for us."
"So with one of those devices, a metal born can create a medallion like this. One for any allomantic or ferrochemical ability?"
"Holy words," Alec said. "But if anyone can say them, it is you, O blasphemous one. Yes, any."
"And did one of you create a medallion that grants all of the powers?" Waxilium asked. Alec laughed. Maracy frowned.
"Why laugh?" "You think us gods?" Alec said, shaking his head. "You see that, the one you hold? It is very complicated. It is stored with the ability to give yourself a sliver of holiness."
"Investiture," Waxilium said. "This inner ring is Nicrosil. You tap it and it grants you investiture, turning you into a temporary ferrochemist who has the ability to fill a metal mine with weight." He held up the medallion. "The iron on this is for convenience, right? You can fill it, but so long as you're tapping the investiture, you could touch any source of iron and turn it into a metal mine."
"You know much about this mysterious one," Alec said. "You are wise and—"
"I learn quickly," Waxilium said, glancing at Maracy. She nodded for him to continue. This was fascinating, but the metallic arts was not one of her areas of expertise. Waxilium had a passion for it, though. "What's this other ring built into the medallion?"
"That grants the warmth," Alec said. "It is a grand combination. Two attributes from separate rings. Took us long to make these work, yeah? The one I wear now only grants two. Weight and connection. I've seen medallions with three. Twice in my life only. Every attempt at four has failed."
"So wear multiple medallions," Waxilium said. "Strap 32 to your body and have all the abilities."
"I'm sorry, great wise one," Alec said. "You are obviously very knowledgeable about this and know things that none of us would ever think to try. How could we be so foolish as to not realize that we could simply—"
"Shut it," Waxilium growled. Alec flinched. "Doesn't work?" Waxilium asked. Alec shook his head.
"They interfere with each other."
"So to create one with multiple powers—"
"You must be very skilled," Alec said. "More skilled than any who has lived among us. Or—"
He chuckled.
"Or you'd have to have all the powers, rather than adding yours to the medallion, then passing it to another to have it added to. If that were the case, you'd be a great god indeed, as powerful as the Sovereign."
"He did create one of these," Waxilium said, rubbing the medallion with his thumb. "One with all of the abilities. A bracer, or a set of them, that granted all 16 allomantic abilities and all 16 ferrochemical abilities." Alec wilted. "That's why we're here, isn't it, Alec?" Waxilium asked, looking into the man's eyes. Maracy leaned forward. Waxilium said he wasn't good at reading people, but he was wrong. He was great at it, so long as reading them involved bullying them.
"Yes,"
Alec whispered. "You traveled from your lands to find the Bands of Mourning," Waxilium said. "Why are they up here?"
"Hidden away," Alec said. "When the Sovereign left us, he took them with him, along with his priests, his closest servants. Well, some of them eventually returned, yeah, with stories to tell. He'd taken them on a great journey, and had them build a temple for him in a hidden range of mountains. He'd left the priests there with the bands, and told them to protect them until he returned for them. And that was dumb, yeah, because we could really use those to fight the deniers of masks."
"Deniers of masks? Like us?"
"No, no," Alec said, laughing. "You're just barbarians. The deniers are really dangerous."
Hey! Wayne called from behind them, hair whipping in the wind, hat held in his hands. When had he woken up?
We knocked your big ship out of the sky, didn't we?
You?
Alex said, laughing.
No, no. You could not have so harmed Brunstell. He fell to a great storm. It is a danger of our ships, so light, so easily troubled by storms. We would have landed Brunstell, but we were in the mountains searching. We were so close to the temple, but then... Yeah. Blown out of the mountains, over your lands, smashed into that poor village. The barbarians there were nice at first. Then the others came.
He shrank down in his chair. Vaxilium patted him on the shoulder.
Thank you, wonderful one, Alex said.
He heaved a sigh.
Well, ever since the Sovereign's elite told us the stories, we've tried to find the Bracers.
Find them? Vaxilium said. You told us he'd left the bands there for himself.
Well, yeah, but everyone interprets it as a challenge, a test sent by the Sovereign. He was fond of those. Why would he let priests tell us about them if he didn't want us to come claim them? Only, after years of searching, everyone started thinking the temple was some fancy legend lost in time. Everyone's uncle had a map, yeah? The type worth less than the paper it's written on? But then recently some interesting stories started circulating. Talk of lands up here, and of mountains nobody had explored. We sent several scout vessels, and they returned with stories of your people in this land. Well, 5 or 6 years back, the hunters sent a big ship up with a quest to finally find the temple, and they succeeded, we think. One skimmer came back with a map of where they'd been. The rest froze to death. A blizzard in the mountains overwhelmed their medallions.
Wind rocked the small ship as Alec fell silent.
We're going after that temple, right? Maracy asked, looking at Vaxilium.
Damn right we are.
22. Maracy had plenty of time to think as they traveled southward toward the mountains. Alec guessed the trip would take about 2 hours, which surprised her. She'd imagined an airship to be a fast-moving vehicle, but this was likely slower than a train. Still, being able to proceed there in a straight line instead of having to follow the landscape was a distinct advantage. Even with the fans whirring in their casings, the airship seemed to spend much of its time gliding. Alec would increase their height or lower it, trying to find favorable winds, and he complained that he didn't know the airstreams of this area. He did his navigation using devices she didn't recognize, along with some startlingly accurate maps of the lower basin. How often had these people prowled through the skies up here, hidden in the darkness, observing and making their maps? Most of the others slept, comfortably tapping warmth as Alec had taught them. When Maracy considered sleeping herself, she could not banish the image of falling from one of those doorways and awakening just as she hit the ground, even with the waist belts tying them all in. Wayne gave her something else to help with the pain, though he wouldn't say what it was. It felt good, though, and she could mostly ignore her aching side. She settled into the seat beside Alec and chatted with him. She felt guilty, as that required him to wear the medallion that let him translate, but he seemed as eager to talk as she was. She could not say whether that was because he was starved for interaction following his incarceration, or if he wanted to be distracted from thinking about the friends he'd lost during his journey. Over the next 2 hours, he told her more about the medallions they wore and the legends of the Bands of Mourning. In Alec's lore, the Lord Ruler had filled them with a great deal of every attribute, but had also crafted them to grant any person who used them the ability to draw those forth, a kind of challenge to mankind to find them, along with a warning not to. Alec didn't seem to consider this a contradiction at all. He also spent more time telling her about life where he was from, a place over the mountains, across the entire southern roughs and the wastelands beyond. A distant, wonderful place where everyone wore masks, though not everyone wore them in the same way.
Alec's own people preferred to change masks according to their professions or moods. Not each day, certainly, but it wasn't uncommon for them to change their masks as often as a lady in Ellendale might change her hairstyle. There were other groups, though. One gave a mask to each child, and those only changed once, when they reached adulthood. Alec claimed that these people, called hunters, even grew into their masks somehow, though Maracy found that difficult to believe. Still other people, to whom he referred derisively, wore only plain, unpainted masks until they did something to earn a more ornate one. "They are the fallen," he explained to her, wagging one hand before himself in a gesture she didn't understand. "They were our kings, yeah, before the world froze. They offended the Jagenmeyer, which is why everything went wrong and..." "Wait," Maracy said, speaking softly so the others could sleep. "The Jaga..."
"Jagenmeyer?" he asked. "It didn't translate." "You don't have a word for it in your language, then?" "It's like a god, only not."
"Very descriptive." Surprisingly, he lifted his mask, something she'd only seen him do that once, when he'd knelt before the masks of his friends. He didn't seem to consider it an infraction of any sort, and kept talking. She liked being able to see his face, even if his wispy beard and mustache looked a little ridiculous. It made him look younger than he really was, unless he was lying about being 22.
"It's like," he said, grimacing, "like a thing that runs the world, yeah? When something grows or dies, the Jagenmeyer makes that happen. There is Herr and his sister Fru, who is also his wife. And she makes things stop, and he makes things go. But neither can make life on their own," Maracy said.
"Yeah,"
he said.
"Ruin and preservation," she said. "The old terrace gods. They're one now. Harmony." "No. They were always one," Alec said, "and always apart. Very odd, very complex. But anyway, we were talking about the fallen, yeah? They work doing anything they can to relieve their burden of failure. A compliment means a lot to them. But you have to be careful, because if you tell them they did well, they might take your compliment to heart and travel back to their people to tell everyone. Then you might be called in to testify about how good a job they did, so they can change their mask. And their language, that's a real pain. I speak a smattering of it. Always useful, so you don't have to wear the medallion. And it makes my head spin, as if I've been flying too high for way too long."
She smiled, listening to him go on, gesturing wildly as he spoke, which she figured was only natural if everyone's faces were covered all the time. "Do you speak many languages?" she asked as he took a breath, finally pausing his narrative.
"I don't even speak my own that well," he said with a grin. "But I'm trying. Seems like a good skill for a skimmer pilot to have, since it's often my job to pilot Wheedlk and take people between ships or towers. And if I'm going to sit half the day in a class, I figure it should be something useful. Though mathematics has..."
"Class?" Maracy asked, frowning.
"Sure. What do you think we do all day on the ship?"
"I don't know," Maracy said. "Swab decks, tie ropes, trim... stuff?
Deckhand types of things."
He looked at her, eyes bulging, then slapped his mask down.
"I'm going to pretend that you did not just compare me to a common low shipman, Miss Maracy. You have to be something more special than that if you want to fly. We're expected to be gentlemen and ladies. We've thrown people overboard for not knowing the proper dance moves."
"What, really?"
"Yeah, really."
He hesitated.
"All right, so we tied a rope to his foot first."
He made a gesture she had started to realize was something like a smile or a laugh.
"He dangled there below Brunstell for a good 5 minutes, cursing up a storm. He never got the cistern three-step wrong again, though. And Svel always said to him..."
Alec trailed off, growing silent. "And," Maracy prodded.
"Sorry. His mask. Svel, on the wall.
Oh.
The conversation died, Alex staring out the front of the ship, then making a few adjustments to their heading. Outside, the landscape was dark, save for a few pinpricks of towns, now far to their left. Though they'd initially skirted the Saren Range, Alec had moved the skimmer into the mountains about a half hour back. Now they flew over the tops of the peaks, having ascended higher than they'd been when flying over the basin.
"Alec," Marcy said, resting her hand on his arm. "I'm sorry."
He didn't respond. And so, hesitantly, fully aware that she was probably doing something taboo, she reached out and lifted his mask. He didn't stop her, and the motion revealed eyes staring sightlessly, a tear trickling down each cheek.
"I'm never going to see them again," he said softly. "Brunstell is crashed. I'll never serve on him again. Hell, I'm never going to see home again, am I?"
"Of course you will," Marcy said.
"You can fly there. Weald won't last on the stone I've got,"
he said, wiping the tears first from one cheek, then the other.
"The stone?"
"Fuel,"
Alec said, glancing at her.
"What, you think Weald flies on clouds and dreams?"
"I thought it flew on Allomancy."
"Allomancy pushes the impellers," Alec said. "But Etmetal is what supports it."
"I don't think that one translated either," Marcy said, frowning.
"Here, see?"
Alec said, kneeling down and opening the compartment where he'd put the little cube that Waxillium called an allomantic grenade. It was attached to a metal shell which glowed softly at the center. Alec pointed, and to the side she could see a greater light blazing with a pure whiteness. A stone, burning like a limelight.
"Or like Allomancy itself," Marcy realized.
"What kind of metal is it, though?"
"Etmetal," Alec said, shrugging. "There's a little bit in the primer cube, too, to make it work. A lot more to make the ship like the Weald go, and a lot more to get Brunstell into the air. You don't have this metal?"
"I don't think so," Marcy said.
"Well, what we have in Weald, it'll be enough to fly us a day or two. After that, we need an Allomancer pushing full time. So unless His Greatness the Drowsy One back there wants to fly with me all the way back, I'm stuck, yeah?"
"You said there was more on Brunstell."
"Yeah, but they have it,"
he grinned.
"At first, the evil ones didn't know how to care for it. Got some wet. That was a good day."
"Wet?"
"Etmetal explodes if it gets wet."
"What kind of metal explodes if you put it in water?"
"This kind," he said. "Anyway, your evil men, they got most of ours."
"And we're going to stop them," Marcy said firmly. "We'll get your crewmates back, stick you on your ship, or some of these skimmers if the big one won't fly anymore, and send you home."
He settled back in his seat, closing the panel under the dash.
"That's what we're going to do,"
he agreed, nodding. Then he eyed her, his mask still up.
"Of course, your people don't have what we do. No airships at all. So they'll simply let me and mine soar away. No information demanded with this technology."
Rusts. He was clever. "Maybe we can give the governor some technology," she said, "like a few medallions. Then promise him trade between our two peoples, fueled by the goodwill of having helped you and yours get home. That will erase some of the shame of what Suit did."
"There are those from my lands who might find your basin up here tempting, with no defenses against attack from above."
"All the more important to have allies among your people."
"Maybe," he said, pulling his mask back down. "I appreciate your genuine nature. You have no mask to hide your emotions. So odd, but welcome in this case. Still, I have to wonder if this will be more complicated than you say. If we do find the relics, what you call the bands of mourning, who keeps those? They are ours, yet I cannot see your metalborn lord letting them slip away from him.
another difficult question.
I honestly don't know,
Maracy said. But you could say we have as much a claim to them as you, since it was our ruler who created them.
A ruler you killed,
he pointed out. But let us not argue about it, Yah.
We will find what we find, and then determine what to do.
He hesitated.
I must tell you something, Miss Maracy. It is possible we will find nothing at the temple but destruction.
She frowned, settling on her seat, wishing he still had the mask up so she could read his face.
What do you mean?
I told you of the ones who came seeking the temple, Alex said.
The hunters, Maracy said.
He nodded.
They were warriors in the time before the freezing. Now they hunt answers to what happened to us, and secrets to making it never happen again. Miss Maracy, I have known many, and they can be good people, but very, very stern. They believe that the bands of mourning were left with us as a test, but opposite the one we all assume. They think the Sovereign intended to see if we would take the power when we should not. And so...
What?
Maracy asked.
Their ship, he said, looking toward her, that came up here first. It carried bombs, great ones, made from the Et metal, intended to destroy the bands. They did not succeed, it is said. But anything could have happened. The place of the temple is said to be frozen beyond anything else in the world. A dangerous place for my kind.
He shivered visibly, then looked longingly at the medallion set on the desk before him.
Go ahead, Maracy said. Put it on.
He nodded. They'd had to do this several times during the flight so far, letting Alec warm himself with the ferrochemical device. Maracy wore one herself, comfortably warm, though up this high the air was probably freezing. Alec settled back, and Maracy, curious, picked up the connection medallion that he had set down. She turned it over in her fingers, noting the sinuous lines down the center, dividing it into separate metals. Iron for weight, duralumin for connection, and most importantly, Nicrosil, to give her the ability to tap metals in the first place. She knew enough metallic theory to identify the metals, but connection? What did it actually do? And how did that make him speak a language of all things? Suddenly feeling foolish, she smiled and took off her medallion. The ship immediately dipped due to her restored weight. She let out a squeal of alarm and immediately donned the weight connection one instead, then blushed, making herself light again, as Waxillium whipped his gun out and leaped to his feet. So he hadn't been sleeping, but eavesdropping. He looked around to see what had caused the lurch. None of the others stirred. Wayne kept snoring. Maracy held up the disc to Alec, then tapped connection. She waited for some reaction inside of her, but it didn't seem to do anything.
We've been foolish, she said. I could have been wearing this all along and speaking your language. Then you could have been warm the entire time.
Alec grinned at her, then said something completely unintelligible.
What's going on? Waxillium said from behind her.
Nothing,
Maracy said, blushing again. It wasn't working. Why wasn't it working? Alec gestured to her, and she switched back to her previous medallion, working very carefully this time to avoid causing a jolt, but mostly failing. How did he transition between them so smoothly? He made a gesture, like a hand drawn across his face, that she thought indicated a smile.
Clever, but it won't work on you.
Why?
Because we're in your lands, he said. The visitor always has to wear the medallion. It's filled with connection, yeah? Blank connection to no place. But connection can't just be connected to nothing. So when you tap it, it reaches out and connects you to the place where you are. Makes your soul think you were raised in this place instead. So your language changes.
Maracy frowned, though Waxillium perked up, pulling up between their two seats.
Curious, he said. Very curious.
It is the way of the world, Alec said with a shrug.
Then why do you have an accent still? Maracy asked. If your brain thinks it was raised here.
Ah,
Alex said, raising his finger.
My soul thinks I was raised here in your lands, but it knows that I am Malwish by descent, and that parents are from Wistlow. So I cannot help but have an accent, yeah? I got it from them. It is how the medallions always work.
Strange, Marcy repeated.
Yeah, Alec agreed.
But Waxillium was nodding as if it made perfect sense to him.
Those mountains to the right, Waxillium said, pointing. Those are some taller peaks than the ones we've been passing.
Yeah,
Alec said.
Good eye, O observant.
Stop with the titles.
Yes, O confusing,
Alec took a deep breath.
Those are the peaks we're seeking. Getting close. We'll have to climb Wheelgup even higher. Cold temperatures. Dangerous altitudes.
He hesitated as Waxillium pointed at something ahead. Difficult to see, but distinct once Marcy noticed it. Light, hovering in the darkness. Only a glimmer, but stark against the blackness.
The Saren Range is uninhabited, Waxillium said, except in a few of the valleys. Too cold, too many storms.
So if there's a light, Marcy said.
Suda's left on his expedition, Waxillium said, standing up straight. Time to wake the others.